Greeny with Mike Greenberg, the podcast.
Yes, you can, and yes, we are. Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Congratulations, Dawn Staley. Congratulations to the women of South Carolina. It was a great game to cap a great season. And my reaction to it yesterday on Twitter, if you all were with me, was very simply, Caitlin Clark had the kind of season that will be remembered forever. But in the end, the best team won. Just that simple. The best team won. They were the best team all year long, and they were clearly the better team yesterday. If you watched the action yesterday, the fact that Iowa was still in it late with chances, I think is a testament to how hard they played and how well they played. But there was, you don't have to be a basketball analyst or a former player or a coach or anything like that to just see one team was flat out better than the other team yesterday, despite the fact that the best player was on Iowa. But that's the little picture story. I don't think that's the big picture story. The big picture story here is about the state of the women's game and about Caitlin Clark in particular. Tell me what you think of this comparison that I made on television this morning. I can think of very few athletes who play team sports who ever transformed the level of interest in their game to the extent that I believe Caitlin Clark has done in the last 2 years. Hear me out. Wayne Gretzky, Michael Jordan, Steph Curry, name the most popular football player. I don't care who they are. They certainly bring people to the tent. But those are sports with long, proud histories of enormous fan bases. We can talk all we want about just how big the NHL's fan base is. The NHL, the Stanley Cup, is something that goes back over 100 years and has been an intrinsic piece of the sports culture for that long. There's been a Stanley Cup longer than there has been an NBA. Forget about baseball. Even Mark McGwire, Sammy Sosa in 1998, Cal Ripken with the chase of the streak culminating in 96, and other baseball players having incredible years. Aaron Judge going for the 62 the other year, whatever it may be. Yes, they make a lot of people stop and pay attention. But there have been people paying attention to baseball forever. Women's college basketball has not been that. The impact that Caitlin Clark had, bringing people who otherwise would have not paid any attention to what was going on and turning them into fans, transforming them into fans of the sport, is, I'm not going to say it's unprecedented, but it is extremely rare. It generally happens in individual sports. Tiger Woods is the best example of that I can think of. How many people became golf fans exclusively because of Tiger? Never paid any attention to golf. And then there was Tiger, and suddenly they got invested. They were invested in him, and some number of them, I don't know what the percentage is, stayed with it because they said, actually, even beyond him, this sport is fun and exciting and interesting and whatever else you may find it. And so he brought so many people into the tent that otherwise had never been there. Maybe the Williams sisters to a degree with tennis. Maybe at a given moment in time, Michael Phelps with swimming, although the Olympics are just different in the way that stuff works. Boxing, every now and again, a boxer, be it in my childhood, Sugar Ray Leonard, certainly in a larger sense, Muhammad Ali. This tends to happen in individual sports because this is supposed to be about individuals. What Caitlin Clark did by bringing this number of people into the tent, and it wasn't just her, but it was her first and foremost, is the kind of thing that comes along in team sports. I mean, it's like a Babe Ruth kind of impact. The impact that Babe Ruth had on baseball, I think, is the kind of impact that Caitlin Clark just had on women's college basketball.
I'm with you every step of the way. Let's tease out these comparisons a little bit further. In the case of Babe Ruth, in the case of Tiger Woods, in the case of other comparisons that you make in trying to contextualize her impact, there are really two things, I think, that you might not know until later on in terms of just how long it lasted. It's one thing for someone to own a moment. We've seen that happen. But in the case of the all-time great legends, what they do is, A, bring in a much wider swath of the audience, and B, make their peers and their leagues a lot more money too. That's going to be the most interesting thing for me to follow. Tiger Woods' impact on golf isn't just in terms of how people played golf. Like, you have these great athletes now playing golf that never did before, but you just saw all the prize money skyrocket. Like, he has a singular ability to raise all of that. Like, the weight of the whole sport, the burden of the whole sport upon his shoulders. Whether or not Caitlin Clark can do that is still very much to be determined. I think she honestly is climbing uphill at a more diagonal a gradient than Tiger Woods had to, because women's basketball is practically starting from zero. Like, if she's actually able to generate, let's say, common or an interest in women's basketball professionally the way that she just did, that would be completely unprecedented. I mean, they're going from zero. Their maximum salary is $250,000. And if she can actually improve the lifestyle, the income, the interest from that standpoint, it would be a singular accomplishment.
Here's one of the things I don't know. So I'm not, and I saw a lot of people getting all worked up about the GOAT debates and all that kind of stuff. This is the best thing that can happen to a sport. Let me make it clear. Having people, having dopes on talk shows like this one, or the one I used to host, which had an enormous impact on a lot of that conversation, where people are debating, well, who's better? And other people will say, well, you're hating on this one and that one. That's how this stuff happens. That's how it works. Don't be upset that people are questioning whether Caitlin Clark is really the GOAT and all that kind of stuff. That's what sports talk is. And you want to be in that. That's exactly what you want. If you're buying stock in women's basketball in general, that's the argument you want happening. You want some people saying, well, she's no Diana Taurasi, or she's no Breonna Stewart, or she's no Cheryl Miller, or she's no whoever else it is that would be the right person to put in that discussion. But so let's put that to the side for a minute, because none of those women ever did anything near what she just did for the visibility of the sport. But here's what I don't know. When Tiger came along, he did it at the highest level of the sport, because he was not only... The reason he became such a phenomenon was not only because he was fascinating, but because he was by far the best player. What I don't know is if Caitlin Clark is going to be the best player. Like, does she go to the WNBA as the best player next year? I don't know the answer.
I did a little research into this, and the best I could find was, so FanDuel right now has her listed, again, this will be her rookie season playing for the Indiana Fever, the team with the first pick, with the fourth best odds to win the MVP as a rookie. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean she's going to be a top five player right away, because there's going to be betting interest, but that's at least one sports book saying that she's going to, at minimum, hit the ground running.
Right. That's what it's going to take, because at some point, her ability to continue to attract this kind, like one of the many things, well, not one of, the thing that made so many people interested in her was she was just so damn good. Like, she was just better than everybody else. I don't know if she's going to be that on the next level. Like, I mean, you know, when I first realized what this was like, you know, when you're associated with a place in the way that I'm associated with Northwestern, people will sometimes ask me things about it, whether it's writing a letter of recommendation for someone who wants to get in, or more frequently, getting tickets to something. Someone texted me a question in like November. Can you help me get tickets to a Northwestern basketball game on this night? I forget what night it was, but it was a night in February. And I looked at the schedule and I said, oh, we don't play that night. And the person wrote back to me and said, yeah, there's a game on the schedule versus Iowa. And I realized they were talking about the women's game. Now, for every other game on the schedule, if you want to go to a women's game, you just show up 1 minute before tip-off and you buy a ticket. It's just that simple. But in November, you couldn't get a ticket.
It's astonishing.
To go see them play Iowa. And that's when I realized something else entirely is going on here. And that's just one example out of all of the, whatever it was, 40 games that they played this year. So, look, all I can say is this was wonderful. I mean, it was just a delight to watch. I'm thrilled. I'm thrilled for all of them. Again, I found myself thinking about people like Pat Summitt, who built this thing as much as anyone did, and really sadly didn't get to live to see it. Like when you think about, we made a comparison last week and one day, I don't think you were here, Hembo, but we were talking about Pat Summitt and Billie Jean King. And Billie Jean King has lived to see all of this. Like, she started it, right? I mean, you could sort of trace everything involving women's athletics in this country can be divided up into before Billie Jean King and after Billie Jean King. But the wonderful part of that is she has lived to see it. She has lived to be celebrated for it. And Pat Summitt did too. She didn't die, you know, at 30. But this was something so different. Like, this was something so much bigger than I ever would have dreamt it could be. If you had said to me, will we be in a place where a women's college basketball game will outdraw game 7 of an Eastern Conference final between LeBron James and the Cavs and the Boston Celtics? I remember that. It was the first year we were doing Get Up. It was Memorial Day weekend of 2018, and LeBron, I want to say he played all 48 minutes in a game against the Celtics on the road, and the Cavs won, and they went on to the final, and they lost. That would have been Golden State. I think that would have been the KD Golden State teams. The point is, like, that game, that night, that game 7, I still remember the huge audience that it had and all that kind of, it was such a big deal to us, you know, when we were launching the new TV show in the mornings. That's LeBron James against the Boston Celtics in game 7 of an Eastern Conference final. This game Friday night outdrew that. We had more people watched that. Watched the game Friday night between Caitlin Clark and UConn. If you had said to me a year ago, will that happen in your lifetime? I would have said, hell no. No chance. And I'm delighted to be wrong. Nothing could be more wonderful than the fact that this has happened and seeing the joy and the spirit and just how wonderful it has made so many people feel. It's fabulous. And I never would have thought it was possible. And so again, I know, you know, you and I researched Pat Summitt a lot for our book. So I know you know all the things I know. It's a shame she should have been able to walk out on the court, like, you know, for the tip-off of this game, you know, and present the opening ball to the referees, or something like that. Like, that's what that would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, it's sad that she wasn't able to see it.
It is. Some things aren't so cleanly or easily explained, because I think, what I mean is, this phenomenon that Caitlin Clark has created, I think goes beyond just her being so freaking good, though. Like, there has to be... We've had a lot of great women's players. She, in my opinion, is the best, but you can have a good faith argument that there are others that were better or greater. So I think there is more to her rise in popularity and the phenomenon than just the fact that she was so good. What I can't do properly is put my finger on it. I can't exactly articulate why the phenomenon became what the phenomenon became. It feels a little like Taylor Swift-y to me. Like, Taylor Swift, obviously a brilliant musician, but she's not disproportionately greater than anyone that's ever done it, and yet everyone knows the songs, everyone has an opinion, and she owned a moment in time unlike almost any artist ever had, and I can't exactly figure out, in Caitlin Clark's case, why she became this.
Right. Why did Elvis become Elvis? Did you read a book, oh my God, his name just jumped out of my head, the Canadian journalist, Malcolm Gladwell, wrote a book in which the point of it was timing in life has so much to do with everything. And he uses examples like the Beatles. The Beatles could never have become the Beatles if all four of them had been born 30 years earlier or 30 years later. There was an opening there. It's not diminishing anything they accomplished. Bill Gates could never have become Bill Gates if he had been born 30 years earlier or 30 years later. The timing, he was just the right person at the right time and had the goods, but others might have, and they just didn't get the chance to do it. And the book actually goes back historically about, I want to say it was like John D. Rockefeller and others who came along at given times in history, in the history of human civilization, where something was possible to accomplish that wouldn't have been at any other time. And so I think there's an element of that. Mm. Caitlin Clark was just the right person at the right time. Now, to answer your question, I don't either know exactly why she was the right person or exactly why, more to the point, this was the right time, mm-hmm. but it just was.
Yeah.
We've just evolved to a place now as a culture where we were ready for something like this. ESPN has been behind this enough that there was an opportunity, there was a platform for it to have this kind of impact.
But it was
and
Fox,
the right person
but it was
came
Fox
along.
That had him all year, though. It's not an ESPN-driven thing by any means. And some people have asked me that. We didn't have a game of theirs, I don't think, until the tournament.
No, but the women's college basketball has been a staple,
no doubt,
of our programming.
That's true.
For as long as I've been here, with a lot of people complaining about it. right? With a lot of people out there saying, oh, why do you guys talk about this? Why do you show this? No one cares. Mm. And no one cares is coded language for I don't care. That when someone says no one cares about, what they're actually saying is, I don't care. But the truth is, most people didn't then. And now they do. And our coverage of the tournament all these years and our amplification of it has definitely helped. But the point that I'm making is, Caitlin Clark was just the right person. She had the goods, and she came along at exactly the right time. And Malcolm Gladwell would tell you that's the answer to your question. Mm. Take a short break. We'll come back. I never got to my Rick Pitino point, but oh, I will make it next on ESPN Radio. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do. Big, small, and when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Greeny today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Greeny, GREENY.
Greeny, the podcast.
Did you know that feeling great starts with a great shave, and great shaves start with Barbasol shaving cream? That's Barbasol shaving cream, an American classic for over 100 years. Close shave America, close shave Barbasol. Ain't no sunshine today for at least 2 minutes for the eclipse. Once again, in my opinion, one of the most overrated events I could imagine.
You need to wait to make that proclamation until after you've experienced it, because it might wind
but
up...
How would I know when it's coming?
When it's coming?
Yeah.
Well, we know exactly when it's coming.
To the minute?
Time-wise. Yeah, I mean...
What minute?
You'll know when it gets dark.
No, but I might be inside. Like, I'm going to have to make a point of being outside to look at this, right?
Do you own windows? Do you have windows in your house?
Yeah, but I don't think you want to see the eclipse through windows.
Well,
right?
You seem to not want to see it at all.
No, well, I mean, let me see what everybody's talking about.
Oh, so now you're kind of interested. I'm talking you into it.
I want to be one of the group.
So now you might start traveling west to see.
I don't want to have FOMO. No, I'm traveling anyway.
You know, Stick to your guns.
You know, I actually thought of this.
Walk to West 26th Street if you want me to.
Is there any chance that Cal took this job yesterday because the eclipse is going to be more seen in Arkansas than Kentucky? Because I did check the map, and that seems to be the case.
This all did come together pretty quickly, so it
yeah,
happened.
Sure
it happened overnight. I'm thinking he's like, let's speed this up. I want to be in Arkansas by tomorrow at 3.
I mean, yeah, do we know where he was for the last eclipse? Was he like right in the heart of it?
So he probably was in Kentucky because he's been there a long time. You know what? They win championships at Kentucky usually a lot more often than we have solar eclipses.
3:25 today. New York City, to answer your question.
Okay, well, I can't wait. I'll make no other plans. Anyway.
Now you love it.
3:25. Oh, I can't wait. Oh, my goodness.
You're a hater.
Oh, look, at 3:26, it's dark. At 3:27, it's light again. Nothing else changed. I don't understand.
You're a hater.
That's a hater. I just don't get what
this is a cataclysmic.
I mean, it could be the end of the world.
It's
we don't know.
It's not cataclysmic.
It's cataclysmic.
No, if the sun ceased to exist, that would be a cataclysmic.
It could happen.
It is, for a minute.
It's just no, it's going to continue to exist.
Well, we don't know for sure.
See it. If the sun ceased to exist, Cam, let me tell you, the darkness would be the least of our problems. Okay? The Earth, as we know it, would become untethered from its orbit and would just careen on into unknown outer space, and we would all die in about 0.00001 seconds.
This is just Copernicus. Like a tease, a preview for, you know, when that inevitably happens millions of years from
I'm
now.
I'm not so sure about that, but I'm telling you, you're going to want to experience this live.
Oh, he's right. Okay. All right. Let me go back to what I was going to say about Patino. I like making big, broad statements which cannot be proven wrong. And so here's what I'm going to tell you. When Rick Pitino left Kentucky to go to Boston, which I want to say is after the 97 season, do I have that right?
Mm-hmm.
They won the championship. He had the whole team coming back. Tubby Smith came in and won the title again the following year with the same team. And Pitino had been, I want to say, in the finals the year before that. Entire team was hurt, and they lost in that. I'm going to tell you that if Rick Pitino had not left to go to the NBA and had just stayed at Kentucky, that he would be the guy right now who would be the closest to John Wooden for most championships. He would have won 6 titles in his career. He wound up winning 1 there, 1 at Louisville, right? So that's it. He's got 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he took Providence to the Final Four. I'm telling you, he would have won as many championships at Kentucky as Coach K won at Duke. That is my grand statement. I stand by it. He definitely would have won the following year when Tubby went there and won with his players. So that would have been 2 right there. And that was a machine. He had a machine working at Kentucky. The combination of Rick Pitino and Kentucky was the best hand-in-glove fit that you could ever possibly imagine. He was as perfect for Kentucky as Krzyzewski was for Duke. Krzyzewski was just the perfect person to come along for a school like Duke when he did. His image, his whole thing fit what the Duke culture, which at that point was there to be shaped, but we all know what Duke University is. Like, he was the perfect person for it. That's exactly what Pitino was. He was going to become an iconic coach in history, and it cannot be disproven. Obviously can't prove it either, but I'm positive I'm right.
So I'm 33 years old, and there are probably a lot of people in the audience right now that did not live this. So I want you to remind me and inform them why it went down the way it went down at the end for Rick Pitino in Kentucky, because
he got the Boston job offered to him. They offered him the president. He became Red Auerbach. They offered him the job as the president and coach of the Boston freaking Celtics. Maybe one of 2 basketball organizations in the world bigger than Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They just offered him the keys to the Celtics. They offer you the Celtics or the Lakers, I guess you go. Didn't they talk about Krzyzewski maybe going? He wasn't run out of there, thrown out of there, or anything. He left the Knicks on his own to go coach Kentucky after having resurrected them and taken them to the playoffs and won a playoff round and done an unbelievable job coaching that team with the bomb squad. They called them, those guys shooting threes way before Steph Curry was even maybe born. He was doing that at the pro level. They had a personality conflict with Al Bianchi, whatever. The point is, he leaves to go to Kentucky and builds up what was going to be a dynasty at Kentucky. And then he was so big, the Celtics came and offered him everything. And that went to hell quickly. Couldn't have gone worse. That was the legendary Larry Bird's not walking through that door.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin McHale's not walking through that door. And then it all went sideways. And then he left. He went back to college. He went to Louisville. And he's won like crazy there. He's an unbelievable coach.
He's an unbelievable coach.
Larry Bird's
coach.
Not walking through that door, fans.
Right? That's it. He does it better than I do it. But the point is, he's an unbelievable coach.
So I'm making you the AD at the University of Kentucky.
Beg him. Call him and beg him. Rick, come back. He didn't leave on, like, the whole thing that went down at Louisville, none of that happened at Kentucky.
No.
Like, the Louisville thing had all of that, we all remember what it was, you know, with the...
And his national title there is vacated.
The Louisville one.
Mm-hmm.
But not the Kentucky one.
No, not the Kentucky one.
No, they didn't have any of that stuff.
No, none of
and
it.
And look at the players. You want to talk about the players Cal had at Kentucky? Go. How quickly could you find the players he had? Like, who were the players on those championship teams? Who are the players on Kentucky? Like, go to their championship team in 97.
Ron Mercer, Derek Anderson, Nazim Muhammad,
96.
Scott Padgett, Wayne Turner, Jamal McGlure. 97 okay. Was the year they lost to Arizona in the final.
Okay, and because there was one of their most important players was hurt. They absolutely would have won that one, too. They all were hurt. They won it in 96. That's what it was. He won it in 96. They went back to the championship game and lost
right.
in 97 because they had significant injury. And then that team came back and won it in 98. Say mm-hmm. the names again.
So the year that they won it?
Well, any of them. I mean, just
nine NBA players.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm talking about. And in those days, they didn't all go to the pros after 1 year. That was the team for like three seasons.
That team stacked.
They were the best team. By so far, it wasn't even close.
They went 34-2 that year.
Yeah. I mean, that's who Pitino was on the verge of becoming. And he left to go become Red Auerbach. And it couldn't have gone worse. And he went back to college and won again like crazy. But as great a program and as much history and everything else as they have at Louisville, it's not Kentucky. But you know what he did? He freaking won huge at Louisville, took them to Final Fours, won a national championship, and would still be there kicking, you know what, if it hadn't been for, well, you know, all the other things that don't look so good in the light of day. But my point is, you have two separate conversations about Rick. You can dislike him, all that, whatever. Plenty of people do. I'm not his PR representative. I don't care one way or the other. But that guy can coach. That guy is as good a basketball coach. If you told me I could have one coach to coach me one season for any team at any level, who would you put ahead of him?
Almost nobody.
Almost nobody.
He has won everywhere. In fact, 30 feet to my left, Rick Pitino once sat over there with you and swore that he would never coach again.
Yeah.
Right? Obviously, nothing could have been less believable. But this is, like, Rick Pitino, and I say this in the most flattering way you can, is a basketball sicko. Like a guy who, after Louisville, went and coached in Puerto Rico and coached in Greece.
Right.
He loves basketball. Yeah. He lives basketball. And the opportunity to coach at Kentucky, given their resources, to come all the way full circle would be unbelievable theater for college basketball.
Yeah.
And you know what he would do there? He would win.
For sure.
He would
win. He's going to win at St. John's, too. And he may want to do that in New York because it's his hometown and everything else. But, you know, Kentucky is Kentucky. That's Alabama. That's Alabama football. It's the New York Yankees. It's the Boston Celtics. It's like there are certain places that are just Montreal Canadiens, right?
What could be a better theater for the sport than Pitino replacing Calipari and winning there? Like, it would be so good.
They would play each other twice a year.
Oh, too. They will, yeah.
Imagine that, because he's still in the conference.
That's what college basketball needs. It needs the characters. It needs the legends. And Rick Pitino is at the very top of that list.
All right, Greeny with you next. I'm ready to go right now.
Green light with Greeny.
Green light is brought to you by Tax Act. Let's get them over with. Hemba, I want to give you the green light. Because this weekend, amidst all of the college basketball, all of the excitement about the women's Final Four, all the excitement about the men's Final Four, and everything else, I'm following along on the Twitter there. And you posted a fascinating tweet. With all the talk this weekend and Tony Clark, the head of the Baseball Players Association, coming out and just basically blaming Rob Manfred and baseball's owners and the pitch clock for all the injuries that we're seeing to pitchers right now, you tweeted, "Baseball's showcase culture is infinitely more culpable for the proliferation of arm injuries than the pitch clock is. Everyone in the game knows this." I defer to you because you know a lot more about this than I do. I'm giving you the green light.
Yeah, so I, as you well know, played college baseball and also for the last 10 years have crunched all the numbers. So I am overqualified to say this. Tony Clark is talking out of his behind. And that is not based on my opinion, although it is my opinion. It is based on the fact that there are no facts to support his. I get it. You're representing the players. You're supposed to recite the lines that they want you to recite. But truthfully, blaming the pitch clock for a spike in pitcher arm injuries is incredibly irresponsible. Because if pitchers pitching that frequently, at least pitch to pitch, was so problematic, then pitchers would have struggled with this for hundreds of years because they've always pitched more rapidly than they do now. The problem right now is much greater. This is a problem Major League Baseball is inheriting. Not a problem that Major League Baseball is creating, as simply as I can put it.
Explain what it is.
Okay, the problem is that our pitchers, with rare exception, at least our power pitchers, are blowing out their arms. And the primary reason they're doing that, of course, is because they're all throwing unnaturally hard. They're doing that, of course, because the harder you throw, the harder you are to hit, and there is any number of data that support that is the case. So you basically have to make a choice. Do I want to get to the big leagues and blow out my arm, or do I not want to reach the big leagues? That's the choice that pitchers are making, and Everyone with any sense is choosing the former.
To be clear, you're saying if you can't throw high 90s in this day and age, you have practically no chance of making it to the bigs.
That's exactly right.
And if you were going to throw high 90s consistently, you have practically no chance of having an entire career without having to have Tommy John.
That's right. Velocity is A, the best way to get people out, and B, the best way to shred your elbow. And this comes from the ground up. Youth baseball right now is filled with what I like to call the showcase culture. If you are an eighth grade student and you can throw 85, that's the best thing you can do. And college coaches are going to be attracted to you because of it. And so from a very early age, people are not only specializing, but throwing as hard as they possibly can and blowing out their arms way sooner than they did before, because we're not teaching the art of pitching anymore. Now, pitchers are great right now, and they're great right now because they're all throwing so hard. But they're not great the way that they used to be. The way that they used to be is, let me get 27 outs. And then it used to be, let me get 21 outs. Well, now it's like, let me get 15 outs, twice through the order, throw as hard as I can, and get my Tommy John out of the way. It's a really sad state of affairs.
And so, go ahead, Bubba.
Yeah, Hembo, did you see this? I saw a video from, I think it was Tyler Glasnow. It was from a couple of years ago now, but he was talking about how the impact of essentially them banning the sticky stuff as actually one of the other reasons for the increased injuries, because, you know, there's obviously the debate between the spider tack, which is going too far, and then just the people using essentially the, you know, the sunscreen and the rosin just to get a grip. And he basically was saying when they just cut it down in the middle of the season, that just changed everything. And he had to grip the ball a way he had never had before. He had to grip it so much harder, and it was just putting so much more strain on the arms and stuff they had never done before, because they were not used to doing that. And to kind of to your point, where they're throwing 90, close to whatever they're trying to do, and they don't have the same grip of the ball. And I think that it was really interesting. What he was saying seemed to make sense coming from a pitcher. And I'm curious if people are also talking about the lack of the, you know, sticky stuff, because I think there are the two sides. There's the going too far spider tack, but there's also just the, hey, I want to get a grip to just, you know, aim where I'm going.
Yeah, I watched the video. It was fascinating insight and commentary. And look, I'm not going to tell a pitcher that his first person experience is irrelevant, but the reason, the primary reason this is happening, and again, this is a multifactorial explanation that is required, one that is going to take years to foster properly from the ground up, not from the top down, is the accumulation of wear and tear over time. The problem is not that pitchers are losing grip when they're 30 years old in the major leagues. The problem is that from the time that they're 10, their little league coaches have them blowing gas. And by the time you get to the big leagues, your connective tissue in your arm just has no chance to withstand it. That, to me, is a much bigger issue, is the way that we have taught and coached pitching is the problem here. And obviously, it manifests in the big leagues. It's much less interesting than, oh, the pitch clock, let's blame Rob Manfred. But in reality, it comes from the youth level.
So if we want to address this, it seems to me one of the ways, and there will be so much opposition to this, I'm afraid to even say the words out loud, but you have to create some incentive for a starting pitcher pitching deeper into a game, / some disincentive for taking him out. So I guess, I don't know what this means, because the traditionalists are going to tell me that this is too gimmicky and too ridiculous, and it's like putting a runner on second base to start an inning and all that kind of stuff.
I'm all ears.
But I mean, if you said that when a pitcher gets to the third time through the lineup, if he gets through that, I don't even know what it would be exactly, that your team gets a run. I mean, it literally would have to be something like that. I don't know what else it could possibly be. You're not going to say, well, now you only need two outs to end an inning. I don't know what it would be, but something like that, some structural change, would be the only way this will change.
Yeah. In the past, we've talked about attaching your DH to your starting pitcher staying
well,
in the game.
That was for the Greeny plan. I'm 100% in on that.
I think it should still be on the table. What I'm most fearful of is the extinction of the starting pitcher. And we are not on the precipice, but we're barreling towards the end of that edge of that cliff.
Oh, I think we're closer to the edge than you think. Let me break quickly, because I want to spend more time on this, and we're up against it here, and I want to get the trivia in. Well, let's get that, and I want to continue this conversation in a minute, but give me the question.
I looked at every NBA player to come out of UConn or Purdue. They, of course, play tonight. Only one of them, only one UConn or Purdue player, averaged 20 points a game in their NBA career. So that is my question. The only player to come out of either Connecticut or Purdue that averaged 20 points a game in the NBA?
Oh, that's a great question. The answer is next on ESPN Radio. Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Greeny, the podcast. Earlier on Greeny.
Watching the sun blocked out by the moon. That's what this is, right? That's basically what this is?
Yes, in a clip.
The sun and moon are crossing paths, and the moon is going to block out our view of the sun. Is that what's happening?
Yes, and it won't happen again for 20 years.
Okay.
It's a big deal.
I think longer than that.
You know what? The Jets haven't won a Super Bowl in 50 years. I mean, 20 years isn't that long.
This is Greeny.
I stand by my original comment. I would be more interested if in the middle of the night it was suddenly going to be light out for 2 minutes than I am in the middle of the day it suddenly being dark out for 2 minutes. I think that would be more interesting to watch. You don't agree?
When you thoroughly enjoy this today at 3:25, you're going to text me and say I'm sorry.
We'll see.
I mean, 3:25 is not even that different than winter anyway. I mean, 3:20, it's dark at 4 o'clock.
Not after daylight savings.
I agree. I'm saying in winter, 3 is not that different than the 4.
Well,
give me an 11 a.m. darkness, and then we can talk.
Well, how did they schedule it for 3:25?
They didn't schedule it.
Copernicus scheduled it.
I feel like this was somehow the TV network's fault.
It's the same people that are scheduling the UConn-Purdue game for 9:20 tonight.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know what?
That's true.
I'd rather we had the solar eclipse at 9:20 tonight, and UConn and Purdue played at 3:25.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
This is the fault of CBS executives.
Exactly right.
Let's swap them.
Exactly right. That's who I blame. All right, Greeny presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Commercial Insurance can protect your small business with over 30 coverage options, an easy-to-use mobile app, personalized discounts, and more. Get a quote in as little as 6 minutes at ProgressiveCommercial.com. Discounts and coverage selections not available in all states or situations. UConn tonight, I like the question.
I looked at every NBA player to come out of either school. Only one of them averaged 20 points a game in the NBA, and so you are going to give me the only player from either UConn or Purdue to average 20 points a game in the league.
Okay, so I've been thinking this one through. I'll go first. The segment is called Sneaky Hembo, because UConn has had so many star players in the NBA, most notably Ray Allen, Rip Hamilton, Kemba Walker, who was the guard who played with Emeka Okafor when they won the championship?
Ben Gordon.
Like a ton of really good players. Your mind immediately goes to all the guys from UConn that you forget that Purdue had the number one pick in the draft in Glenn Big Dog Robinson. Now, he didn't wind up having the career that everyone forecast for him, but I think he was a better scorer than people remember him for being. So I'm going to throw that one out there. That's my guess. Glenn Big Dog Robinson. Bubba.
Yeah, the two names I thought of were first Ray Allen, but the first name that came to mind was, I'm kind of going on the same road as you because I was young enough to see all of Big Dog's career at Purdue. He was dominant. I remember it in the NBA. I'm going to Glenn Robinson as well.
Next, Cam.
Kemba.
He's going Kemba. Did Kemba average 20 points a game?
Probably not.
Okay.
Kemba Walker is Jack's guess, while Brandon is guessing Ray Allen.
Okay, so we got
Ray's got to be
potpourri. What do we got?
The correct answer is Glenn Robinson.
Yeah, oh, big dog. Yes.
20.7 points a game. The rest of this leaderboard, if you will, Kemba Walker at 19.3.
Wow.
Ray Allen at 18.9.
Kemba who? Wow.
Joe Barry Carroll at 17.7.
Yeah, I remember him.
And Rip Hamilton at 17.1.
Was Joe Barry Carroll the second pick in the draft? I want to say.
He was the first pick in 1980.
Kemba was ahead of Ray Allen. Wow.
Joe Barry Carroll was the first pick in the NBA draft?
In 1980. Let's see who else was in that draft.
What draft is that?
1980. That was the
year after Magic.
Kevin McHale went third. He was the best player in that draft. Kiki Vandeweghe.
Who was second?
The second pick that year was Daryl Griffith out of Louisville.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Duncanstein. Daryl. Okay. Anyway, very well done. Let's finish up. We're going to do a kiss of death here and pick the game tonight in a minute. But make your final point on the baseball, and we'll keep doing it. But again, for those just joining us here, baseball's players union, the leadership of it, Tony Clark, released a statement over the weekend blasting baseball for the pitch clock and adjusting it. And then that is basically essentially suggesting that is clearly the reason that all these pitchers are hurting their elbows right now. And Hembo strongly disagrees.
Yes, it is a highly irresponsible thing to claim. It is patently untrue. There are a variety of factors as to why so many big league pitchers are getting Tommy John surgery. Just over the weekend, we learned that Shane Bieber and Yuri Perez and Spencer Strider all have elbow issues. By the way, all three having elbow issues under different sets of circumstances. Shane Bieber, not coincidentally, after two starts getting Tommy John, he worked the entire offseason at improving his velocity by 2 miles per hour in his contract year. It's not a coincidence. Velocity is the best way to get a hitter out. It's also the best way to blow out your arm. The problem is, life is all about incentives. It's all about incentives. If you want to reach the big leagues, you have to throw hard. If you want to throw hard, you're probably going to have elbow issues. And so if Major League Baseball is going to fix this, it's going to need the help of everyone else below it. Because Major League Baseball can't fix a problem that it's not creating. Major League Baseball is inheriting this problem. And I'm afraid that we might reach a point where the starting pitcher becomes completely extinct because investing in any of them is not going to be worth a lick of money because it's too risky.
So the answer is, once again, my answer, I suggested this a long time ago, in the same way that I solved the All-Star Game problem, I can solve this. In Major League Baseball, they should enact a rule, feel free to call it the Greeny Rule 2.0, in which as soon as the starting pitcher is removed from the game, that team loses its designated hitter. Simple. Done. Create infinitely more incentive for teams to leave their starting pitchers out there. Now, there are unforeseen circumstances when a pitcher gets hurt or whatever it is, and some will say, well, then what do you do? And you know what I say? I say, tough noogies. There's really nothing else you can do. That's going to be a very, very small unintended consequence of solving what is a very, very big, practically existential problem for Major League Baseball. The great starting pitcher pitching deep into a game is an intrinsic piece of the beauty of the sport, and it has been lost, and I fear forever. And the point you're making is that's only going to get worse.
I think it's only going to get worse. I like your idea a lot, because if we can provide incentive for starting pitchers to lengthen, what it's going to mean is they're not going to be throwing as hard. So they're not going to be taxing out their elbow. So they're going to remain healthier. That's what we need to live and reach that world. But in order for Major League Baseball to pull this off, It's going to need to enact a basically like a bottom up program, and everyone in the baseball world has to be on board.
All right, let's pick the game.
Hashtag KOD. The kiss of death.
UConn, Purdue, Connecticut is a 7.5 point favorite in the championship game tonight. The total is 145.5. Hembo, what do you think?
I'm playing UConn -7.5. They are at least 7.5 points better than Purdue. Purdue's had a great run, but we know that Zach Edey is the center of their universe. And I think Donovan Clingan, the stud center out of UConn, by the way, 2 7-footers in the national championship game is going to be a throwback, at least in that sense. Donovan Clingan will be able to neutralize the Zach Edey effect, at least in some sense. They're more than happy to let him take tough twos. I think it's going to be incumbent on Purdue's perimeter players to make a bunch of threes. I don't see him doing it. I think Hurley wins his second title in a row.
What's the over-under on how many minutes into the game Clingan has his second try?
probably under.
Look,
that's
everyone
the key.
In America is finding out what all of us who root for Big Ten basketball know. With Zach Edey, nothing he does is a foul, and everything anyone does unto him is a foul. I also like UConn.
You do?
Yeah, for sure. I told you after the first weekend, no one will play them within 10
yeah,
points.
They can beat the Hawks.
No one has. No, I didn't say that.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry. That wasn't
I
you.
I said that jokingly. Don't get me in trouble.
Wait, that was you.
No, it was me. I said it in jest, in the same way that you said Jimmy Fox died of choking on a hot dog.
But that was true.
Did
was
he actually?
All right, listen, that's
you
all
think
the time
Jimmy
I
Fox
have.
Liked the eclipse?
I got to run out and see the sun get blocked by the moon for 2 minutes and pretend something really exciting has just happened, and then we'll reconvene tomorrow on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Greeny, the podcast. You can listen live each weekday morning at 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio. Or watch the show through the Watch tab on the ESPN app. Also catch Greeny on Get Up, weekday mornings at 8 on ESPN. And also available wherever you get your podcasts.